Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Good afternoon, everyone. Delivering first-class apprenticeships. No pressure, then, is there in a room like this? We might not take 15 minutes, you ever know, because none of this is going to be like rocket science or fireworks. Hopefully, you'll recognise a lot of it. But we think at our college that really delivering good apprenticeships is taking it back to the basics, on which sort of point I'll say, what is an apprenticeship? Now, we've heard that sort of mentioned a couple of times this morning already. If you do a Google image search for apprenticeship or master and apprentice, apart from a few shady images which pop up when you put master and apprentice in, but we'll leave that to one side, this is the sort of thing that comes up. And I guess if we all got up and went outside and talked to man on the street and said, what's an apprentice? They'd come up with something not unlike these images. It's generally a young person in a job, generally a younger person, in the care of and being instructed and mentored by an older person, a master, a gaffer, and teaching them all the tricks of the trade. And that sort of thing has been going on for hundreds and hundreds of years, hasn't it? And it crosses all sort of cultures and all sort of areas of life, religion, sport, education. It's a sort of a natural sort of order of things. And it's so much so that, in fact, it's crossed over into popular culture. So have a bit of audience participation here now then. Put your hands up if you've seen Star Wars. Pretty much universal, okay? So we're going to quote Yoda from Star Wars. Always two there are, a master and an apprentice. And that resonates with us because it's something we're used to and it's something that's been going along for hundreds of years. I wonder if it would have resonated if he'd said, always three there are, a master, an apprentice and somebody to pull down the public funding. It's not quite the same sort of thing, is it? But it cuts to the heart of what is a good apprenticeship programme. I've got to thank my IT technician, by the way, for a bit of miracle with a Photoshop there. The key to quality apprenticeships, as we see it, is the relationship between the company and the apprentice. The apprentice is, after all, apprenticed to the company. And therefore, the critical factor is that there is ownership of the apprentice by the company, or the master, or the gaffer, or whatever you want to call it, but that person within the workplace that has taken that young person under their wing and is passing on to them all the skills of the trade and the techniques that they need to develop in their career. I'd actually say that without that sort of clear bond, there can't actually be a quality apprenticeship. It's that important. It's the main issue within the apprenticeships. I've had a bit of a swipe there, which is why PLAs weren't very good. I never believed in PLAs, never had anything to do with PLAs, and I don't think you can actually call them an apprenticeship because the employer-apprentice relationship wasn't the key to that particular programme. Okay, so let's do a bit of nasal gazing for us in the room. What's our role then? Well, I tell you what, I think we've got a bureaucracy-centric view. I don't know if that's a word. I've made that up last night over a glass of wine or whatever. But a bureaucracy-centric view of apprenticeships. And in that sort of crazy world that we inhabit, the pursuit of data for the government and paperwork and targets has skewed the nature of the apprenticeship programmes. And if you look at the growth of the 12-week apprenticeships, trying to gain displacement, all of the issues highlighted by Panorama and things like that, all of them are a result of that sort of, you know, target-driven economy for apprenticeships. So I'd say that a quality apprenticeship has an employer and an apprentice at the heart of it. So what are the features then of a quality apprenticeship? Some of this has been mentioned. I mean, Ben picked this up earlier, but it's finding the right apprentice for each employer. So it's the aptitude, the attitude, all the things we look for. A lot of use of work experience tasters. I mean, I'm sure a lot of you are running pre-apprenticeship programs now, but we believe it's important to get lots of work experience tasters in there so that the young people get an idea of what it is that they're likely to be involved in. And if you get employers involved in that as well, it gives them an early opportunity to look at young people whilst they're still pre-apprentices before they go on to the full programme. And in terms of that finding the right apprentice for the employer, it does go back to this sort of this constant pull between academic and vocational and the careers guidance, which you mentioned earlier. A lot of lecturers at our college, mainstream lecturers on the full-time programmes, are absolutely gobsmacked when we say that if you come on the pharmacy technician advanced apprenticeship, the entry criteria are 5 A to Cs with A or B, maths, English and science, which is higher than the A-level entry requirement. And it's sort of, oh, but it's only an apprenticeship. Well, it isn't only an apprenticeship, isn't it? It's an apprenticeship for somebody who eventually might be dispensing drugs to all of us out here. So we've all kind of got a vested interest in having the correct people on that programme, haven't we? It's absolutely about getting under the skin of the employers. What the employer needs and wants, and you know, people speak eloquently about, you know, you've got to meet what the employer wants. Well, you have, but there's a kind of a bit of an onus on us as well to show the employer what he needs as well, because sometimes, particularly in SME, they don't have the overall view of, you know, training issues in their particular sort of sector or firm. And, you know, it's possible that sometimes we have to nudge them along as well. But you literally have to live in the pocket of those employers. It's about taking that focus off us, you know, on all those charts of what's fully funded, part funded, co-funded, God knows what, you know, it comes out every week, doesn't it? An employer doesn't, he's not interested in that sort of stuff, doesn't need to see it. The relationship between us and the employer and finding out what makes them tick and what they want is the critical part. We try to get employers involved, and it is difficult. So I try, because it doesn't always happen, but get them involved in the initial assessment, the interview and the induction of the apprentices, whether we hold that on their premises or whether we drag them into college to do that. But we set that up, and almost, for a lot of SMEs, if you're offering a kind of a bespoke recruitment agency thing from them, they think that's great anyway, because they perceive that we're carrying all the cost and they're going out and finding the young people. That's a bit off their sort of bottom line. They haven't got to worry about. But also it allows you at an early stage to get that fit between the apprentice and the employer, which, you know, as we said, is the key sort of factor. There's also a bit about educating the employer. And I'll come on to educating us in a minute. But there's a bit about educating the employers. Somebody said earlier on, who the hell knows what's in a framework? Who's heard of them outside of sort of people in the trade? Not many people, really, is there? So there's a lot about talking to the employers in terminology they sort of understand, and not framework this and framework that. Coming from the Midlands, I'm frequently at sort of Chamber of Commerce meetings, stuck up a corner with about 6 or 7 engineering employers around me, berating me and bemoaning the fact that apprenticeships have sort of died a death. And you say, well, there is an apprenticeship. Oh, yeah, that modern apprenticeship, you can do it in 6 months. When I was a lad, it was a 5-year apprenticeship. And so you say to them, well, OK, but when you finished your, you know, 5-year indentured apprenticeship, what did you get? Oh, I've got my HNC. Right, OK. So if you do your level 2 apprenticeship, your level 3 advanced apprenticeship, and your higher level apprenticeship, you've got the equivalent of your HNC, and you've taken 5 years. All right, well, nobody's ever sort of explained it like that. And that's because we break it down into chunks, don't we? This framework, that framework, advanced this and whatever. But in fact, if you went out and said, yep, we're doing a 5-year apprenticeship that'll get you to HNC level, they go, oh, we understand that. So it's a bit about sort of educating them. And then there's a bit about how they can add value to it. The best apprenticeship programme I've ever sort of run through a college that I've worked in kind of occurred by accident. And I'd been asked to go out to see this small engineering company because they'd complained about what we were teaching the apprentices on day release. So I got my gum shielding and I jumped in the car and I drove over to this little engineering company. And in the Midlands, we've got an unending capacity to park little engineering companies in sheds in the middle of nowhere, sort of down the side of a canal or something. So I pulled up outside of it, you know, my expectations didn't sort of rise at that point. And I went in, and it was a little engineering company. It was run by a man, his son. His wife ran the office, which was the usual sort of little broom cupboard with dirty, oily chairs at the front of the workshop. And they'd got 3 apprentices as well. And the son came out to talk to me. He said, Dad's just in the workshop with the apprentices. They're finishing the job off. And he was telling me about this company. I said, well, what do you do? You know, low expectations, nuts, bolts, washers and that sort of things. He said, oh, he said, Dad's invented a new electromechanical interface, which he's patented. I said, oh, yeah. I said, is there much of a market for it? He said, oh, yes, yeah. So we've sold it. And they use it at Sellafield in the robotic cranes that move the spent nuclear fuel into the cooling pond. Oh, right. So I thought, oh, that's something you don't sort of expect. And I went into the workshops, and there's Dad at the lathes with the three apprentices. And this is Wednesday, and on Tuesday, the lads are in for sort of day release. And I said, you know, hello, Mr. Nixon, you know, how's it going and whatever. He said, oh, I said, I don't want you to teach these lads on the day release or whatever. He said, I have to spend all Wednesday with my old HNC textbooks out, giving them a full day of training based on what my HNC in engineering was. And he was doing that every week. Now, obviously, he's making a hell of a lot of money off selling stuff to Sellafield, obviously, I would imagine. But to me, that was like the perfect apprenticeship. Because then we sat down and said, well, we're doing this, and the reason we're doing it is because this, this, and this. And he said, well, I also need him to know this. So he was actually doing proper being like a master to those apprentices in terms of passing on his skills. And I never forget that, and I still wheel that out even today, but I thought that was a very good sort of model for what the relationship of apprentices and their employers are. Okay, so education of the provider. The employer, bizarrely, does know his business. So when we walk out and go, there's your prospectus, take it all, there's the framework, there's the safe guidelines, take it or leave it. It's no wonder, is it, that some of them are sort of turned off and go, who's this idiot to walk through the door and tell me he knows, you know, about, you know, a sustainable waste management apprenticeship or whatever. So it's about, as I said, getting under the skin of the employers and working out what it is they want. And, you know, I don't know what you thought this morning, but if the government bends enough to allow us to flex the frameworks by, that, say, that 20%, that would make it extremely easy, wouldn't it, for us to sort of flex frameworks to meet the needs of employers. And, you know, as we've said several times, there's over 200 apprenticeship frameworks, but I guess, I mean, I don't know if anybody's here from the government who's got the statistics, what, 80% of apprentices in Britain are probably on less than 20 frameworks, I'd have thought, you know, the usual suspects and whatever. So it's about us going out there and making sure we've got the whole catalogue with us when we go and see the employers. Effective planning of the training and assessment, so linking the theory to the practice effectively. At colleges, and we'll hold our hands up here, you know, in places where I've seen failing apprenticeship provision in colleges, it's normally because you've either got lecturers doing all of it and they don't understand the workplace element and can't keep on top of the MVQ, the work-based assessment, or you put Joe in to do key skills because he's got 2 hours a week free. And he hasn't got a clue about key skills and the lads aren't interested in it anyway. So that effective planning, a training assessment, I think you have to plan apprenticeships more than you have to plan the other programmes within a college. And, you know, there's still this element of is it a poor relation, but in actual fact, it's the programme that is hardest to deliver. Put only the very best staff in front of the employers and the apprentices. People from colleges will definitely understand where I'm coming from because those staff need to be masters as well. And there's a thing within the trade and it carries across into the private sector when you look at some of the salaries for assessors and whatever. Forget the idea about is the kid going on to an academic or a vocational qualification. There's a kind of a schism, isn't there, between lecturers who are academics and trainers, assessors, who are like these second-class citizens on worse terms and conditions and lower salaries. When we had our last Ofsted inspection, we actually put the curriculum to shame because the trainer assessors and the lecturers in the Business Development Directorate had the highest grade profile from all the Ofsted inspectors in the classroom. And those of you who've been through a modern sort of Ofsted will know they, you know, that the classroom observations, they do you to death. They're like camp out in the classrooms. We had the highest grade profile. We had one satisfactory lesson. And then it was about 50-50 between outstanding and good for the rest of the lessons. That was a lot better than the curriculum teams. So we've got to get away from this idea that, you know, the guy who's got the couple of hours spare or the one you want to offload from curriculum, goes in there and actually delivers the apprenticeships. It needs to be our best people. Monitor, monitor, monitor. That goes back to my planning thing. There's a lot to juggle in an apprenticeship, isn't there? Loads of stuff to juggle. So we have something called an apprenticeship performance review, which every department or team framework has a monthly review of where every single apprentice is in terms of their progression towards the different elements of the programme. If you wait 12 weeks or whatever it is to do your reviews, you know, the wheel's fallen off the wagon and rolled downhill by that time. So we stay on top of it by doing a monthly monitoring of where all the apprentices are. And that's one of the things that leads to we've got very high timely success rates. And we manage that by keeping people on track by monitoring it a lot. And I've gone for communication as well next. How many people have had an employer phone up and go, for God's sake, stop ringing me. You're pestering me all the time. Probably none of us have, we? But how many get a thing back when you did your employer survey going, communication is dire. I never know who to ring. You never get the same person. Why don't you send me a report on my apprentices? All that nuts and bolts stuff, isn't it? We should be doing that. Because as we said, the employer and the apprentice are the prime relationship in that sort of gig. So it's up to us to keep them informed on what's happening with their potential employees. The best employers encourage progression for their apprentices, which comes back to having the right person in that company in the first place. If they've got the right young person, they want to invest in that young person, they want to see them progress, they want to see them get to HNCs or to degrees. What we've got to do is make sure that we influence all our employers to sort of follow that sort of guideline and make sure that they know the progression routes that are available, both to, you know, higher level apprenticeships or into the college for shorter courses or off to a commercial company for something specialist. But once people have tasted that sort of, that thrill of sort of, you know, vocational education, if you get it right, they want more. It's like a drug. So it's up to us to keep putting the progression routes in front of them to make sure that they stay with it. And then finally, really, celebrate success. We hide our light under a bushel, don't we, on the apprenticeships, which is why mums and dads probably think it's like some second-class thing, do you know what I mean? But we've all seen how people's lives are changed by being on apprenticeships and how they get on and how they get to be directors of companies and whatever, having gone through the apprenticeship programme. And, I mean, I don't know if Ben would agree with this, but I think the more we celebrate success, the easier it gets to get young people into apprenticeships, because obviously the schools won't celebrate our success, so we have to do some of that and, you know, really sort of trumpet the successes. And I think, you know, hold the same kind of awards evenings and things and certificate handing out that you do for your other courses at the college. So that's pretty much all I've got to say, other than to say in summary, I think the apprenticeships are about the employer-apprenticeship relationship. Let's forget about getting too bogged down by the paperwork and stick to that original thing. You know, in this country, we've got a proud tradition of apprenticeships. It goes back 500 years. So we need to celebrate our achievements and thereby, you know, ensure our success for the future. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.